Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
Cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening? Hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everybody, to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to have you with us this week. A lot of action in sports, including free agency in the NFL. A lot of college basketball going on right now. We'll talk about that. And also Major League Baseball, spring training. March, a busy month. But as far as spring training goes and baseball, we'll talk to our professor of sports, John Poulter, out of Toronto later in the program. With college basketball, we got Bob Hyman, and he's at the ACC tournament at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. We'll talk to him. Also, Craig Crutchfield coming to us from the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. at the Big Ten tournament. Jeff Rich from the Sports Byline USA Network will join us in the next segment talking about free agency in the NFL, and Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting throughout the show talking both football and college basketball. But some moves in free agency. Jay Cutler, he is gone from the Bears, holding all these different records, but not enough winning and a lot of injury and interception. And he, the Jets are actually looking at Cutler right now. That's the big news. And there's this kid in New York. He was at a custody battle, this Jets fan. And the judge said, well, I'm going to give custody to your mom. He goes, no, my mom beats me. He said, well, I'll give custody to your dad. And he goes, no, my dad beats me. He says, well, who do you want to live with? He says, I want to live with Jay Cutler. He doesn't beat anybody. The Bears get Mike Glennon from Tampa Bay. I guess he's going to be the answer here. So everybody's happy with that. Yes, indeed. The kids especially love it. So we'll see what Mike Glennon does. He hasn't done much in Tampa. We'll see what happens in Chicago. And then, of course, the Brock Osweiler trade from the Texans to the Cleveland Browns. And the Texans may be looking for Tony Romo down there from the Dallas Cowboys. So you got Texans, you got Cowboys, you know, you got a lot of gunfire and horses. Change that up. Let me hear the other clips there. Oh, yeah, that's the flip-flop. I like that one. And the gun. So Brock Osweiler gone. Bad move by the Texans. And we'll see what happens with them. They're thinking Tony Romo maybe in Houston. So we'll talk about that with Jeff Rich coming back after this. You're listening to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Hang on, a lot happening on the show. Be your own boss. Listen to this from Home Improvement USA. Ideal Furniture can set you up with your own furniture distribution center. You can offer name brand mattress and furniture at a fraction of the cost of traditional retail stores. They combine factory direct pricing with their exclusive no-cost furniture broker marketing system that allows you to substantially undercut retail store prices while generating amazing profits. Getting started with Ideal Furniture is easy with an initial investment under $10,000. They've been around for decades, have over 110 distribution centers across the country, and are rated A+. With the Better Business Bureau and other consumer review sites. Let us walk you through it.
Contact Home Improvement USA at 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com. That's 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com. Be your own boss. Contact Home Improvement USA at 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com.
Hi there, this is Chris Berman from ESPN.
Hey, Packer Dave, I know you know about the frozen tundra, but about the rest of football, do a little boning up, eh?
I have been boning up, and I'll tell you, a lot of moves in free agency over the last week. Brock Osweiler going to the Browns, Mike Glennon to the Bears, Jay Cutler's a free agent now, and Brandon Marshall goes to the Jets. All of that happening, and to talk about it from the Sports Byline USA Network, you can hear him on Sundays from 8 to 10 Pacific time in the morning. That's 11 to 1 p.m. Eastern time at sportsbyline.com. He is Jeff Rich. Jeff, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing really well, man. Free agency's underway, and my taxes are done. And according to my accountant, it's good news. So reasons to be happy all weekend, man.
All right, I'm happy for you. Mine are still up in the air. We'll have to see. And also from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago, as he is every week, he's here, Steve Leventhal. And Steve, your Bears now, Jay Cutler-less. What does everybody?
My Bears? I'm a reporter. I'm objective. The Bears. Okay. The Bears in Chicago.
Okay, so everybody there happy right now? Are they?
Well, I would think you'd think about the fact that the ironic thing is that Jay Cutler owns all the Bears passing records. Now, what does that have to say about either A, the fact that they haven't had, as it was mentioned on TV the other day, an all-pro quarterback since 1985, who was?
1985?
Yes.
Jim McMahon.
That is correct. Ding, 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 ding. So, you know, they haven't had anybody of note, and Jay Cutler never got better. Cost a lot of money. It was a dumb deal. Probably cost the general manager his job, but he's gone now. So let's see what's going to happen with Mike Glennon. What's his deal?
Hey, let me ask you guys a question. You know that I guess it would have been the 2005 draft. You had Leinart, you had Vince Young, you had Cutler. I mean, you know, certainly a far cry from the 83 draft. You know, Cutler, obviously the best career of the three of them. And overall, you know, I mean, Cutler had the one run to the NFC Championship where they beat a division champion with a losing record. That's his one playoff win. Really disappointing from that draft class, and not exactly what the Bears were expecting when they gave up quite a bit to acquire Cutler from the Denver Broncos in 2009.
They did, and he had his moments, and you certainly know that he can throw the ball. Maybe just the right situation, but he's had two shots now, and we'll see. Now, Osweiler going to your Cleveland Browns, because Jeff lives in Phoenix, covers sports in Phoenix, but he is he is from the Cleveland area. And what does this do? Robert Griffin III out.
Probably Robert Griffin III out, probably Brock Osweiler out. You know, it's just what approach are the Browns going to take to the quarterback position? You know, it's kind of cool because I could talk about the Browns like a fan because I'm a radio guy and I'm allowed to have opinions. I'm not stuck in that bubble of no cheering in the press box like Leventhal there. But the Browns don't want Brock Osweiler. The Browns want to try to flip him. They're not going to be able to do that. It's too public that they intend to move on. This was a shrewd move. This was an unprecedented move. They basically take on the $16 million that is owed to Brock Osweiler this season, but all his money's off the books. I mean, Houston took care of a lot of the money up front, and they needed to dump salary. The Browns needed to take on salary to reach the salary floor, which we haven't talked about because it's a relatively new deal with this, resolution from the latest lockout that we experienced, back in 2011. The Browns are going to take on the salary. They're going to acquire a second round pick. You know, it could be a pretty low second round pick, especially if Houston acquires Tony Romo, like everybody assumes is going to happen. And the Browns quarterback position was not resolved or even addressed with this Brock Osweiler acquisition. It's more just a movement of money, like we see in the NBA, that deadline talk that we always talk about, those dead weight expiring contracts. This is exactly what it is. And we just haven't seen that before in the NFL.
Yeah, he just stole my thunder. I was going to say that's the kind of move that they do in the NBA to play around with the salary cap.
Okay.
Theo Ratliff's expiring contract, I think, is the way that we all knew it in NBA lore.
Would you want the Jets on your team, Jeff? I mean, would you want Cutler on your team, Jeff?
Absolutely not. You know, and I know that, you know, I've got quite a few friends in Chicago. That's where my wife's from. And I know that Cutler's got his fans there. But the results just weren't there. You know, they seemed to find a good thing with Brandon Marshall there. Couldn't really duplicate it with Alshon Jeffrey. And I, Cutler's not going to the Giants, so he's not going to reunite with Brandon Marshall for a third time. I see him going to the Jets, and I see them doing better, but better than they were with Geno Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick and everybody else that Todd Rolls and Rex Ryan have rolled out there over the last couple of years since Mark Sanchez's rookie success went dry really quickly. I think that he could be serviceable, but I don't think that he's good for a contender, and I don't think that he's good for a rebuilding team. So you got to find somewhere in the middle, somebody that's going to be 7-9, 8-8, 9-7, and you don't know where to assume that place is because Jeff Fisher is no longer coaching in the NFL.
The problem I was going to say with Jay Cutler is if you do not have an offensive line to protect him, he makes bad decisions. So he's got a good arm. He's a tough guy. He's tough as nails. There's no question about that. But if he doesn't have the time to throw and he gets under pressure, he makes dumb decisions that usually result in interceptions and bad sacks.
Yeah, and you spend a fair amount of time at Hallis Hall. You know, I think the assumption is that he's a prototype Delta Bravo. You actually spend time with it.
A
Delta Bravo, a DB. I don't know what we can say. I don't know what the FCC is going to allow me to get away with saying.
I know
here,
where
so
he's going with that.
PG-13.
He was saying a word that ends with bag and begins with a D, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Continue.
Okay. Where do we go from here?
Go ahead.
Well, no. I'm asking you. You've talked to Jay Cutler. Is he what a lot of the public perceives him to be? You know, he's got a kind of that celebrity reality star wife, and he just doesn't come across like he's the guy that you want in your social circles.
Well, I think the issue is that everybody seems to want, a Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, sort of a magnetic personality that goes out and does commercials and is a pitchman spokesperson. But that's just not Jay's personality. He's a quiet guy. He does not like the limelight and the spotlight. He just kind of he's more of a lunch pail guy, which would be fine if he was a career backup somewhere. But, you can't necessarily marry the notion of you want to be an NFL star quarterback and the guy who just kind of comes in and clocks in and clocks out.
Jeff Rich with us from the Sports Byline USA Network, along with myself, Packer Dave, and Steve Leventhal. Jeff, what about the Texans if they actually get Tony Romo? Who plays quarterback for them in week 3 when Romo is injured?
Oh, my. Do they still have T.J. Yates on the roster? I actually have to look at their depth chart now. I don't know what's going on there anymore.
He's a Carolina boy, by the way, Yates.
You know what? There was T.J. Yates. I think he came in and played that like one or two games at the end of the season when Schaub was hurt. They knew they were in the playoffs, and you had all these truthers in Houston pulling for Case Keenum, who I think we saw quite clearly at St. Louis a year ago. He can't play in the NFL. But it's interesting. You got to figure out who Bill O'Brien's going to go with there.
Okay. Well, we'll see about that. I think anywhere Tony Romo goes, he's going to get injured. Steve.
Well, I want to know what the Bears are getting in Mike Glennon.
They're getting a tall quarterback that couldn't beat Josh McCown out years ago, and a guy that still held the clipboard behind Jameis Winston. I don't get the Mike Glennon hype. I've never gotten it. They when there was talk of Carson Palmer retiring after last season, they said no big deal. Plan B is that they're going to go. They're going to go out and get Mike Glennon. I don't understand why anybody think. I don't understand why anybody thinks that Jimmy Garoppolo is an obvious phenom, or he's going to be the answer anywhere. The guys that just haven't played that much, and Glennon's played plenty. He's just shown that he can't play. He's Derek Anderson, and Derek Anderson's a great backup for Cam Newton, but not the guy that you want to lean on to start 16 games this season.
Isn't he going to make more money than Aaron Rodgers in this deal?
Yeah, probably. That's a $15 million for Mike Glennon makes me wonder, what the hell's going on over there at Hallis Hall, man.
Yeah, well, sometimes they make bad moves, the Bears. Okay, let's move to college basketball, Steve. What do you say?
Well, it's the best time of year. Absolutely the best time of the year. What I'm hoping that Jeff can enlighten us a little bit is what's going on out there out west in that Pac-12 group, because you've got Arizona, you've got Oregon, you've got UCLA. Is which team's coming out of that group?
I would think it's Arizona. I think that they play better defense, regardless of what happens in the Pac-12 tournament, you know, up in Vegas. I think that Arizona is the best, you know, is the team best suited to make a run in the tournament. I think that all three of them can. I mean, I think that you could see, I think you could conceivably see, depending on how they're seeded and what brackets that they end up in. I think we could see both UCLA and Arizona in the Final Four here in Glendale, Arizona. I don't know why. I'm just not that high on Oregon this year. You know, I think that they underachieved a lot. I thought that they were a cut above everybody else, and they just couldn't separate themselves from the rest of the pack throughout this Pac-12 season.
So that, and then, of course, I hope you agree with me that the ACC is by far the strongest conference in the field at the moment.
I don't think there's any question about it. I just think that you got a lot of depth. I think that I mean, it's the usual suspects at the top. There's nothing dynamic going on about it, and it's, you know, I don't know if it necessarily draws a yawn because they play exciting basketball there, but, you know, they're going to go, you know, they're what, a 14-team conference? They're going to go 7-8 deep with teams, regardless of what happens in their conference tournament.
So you're right. You're going to see the North Carolinas, the Dukes, but there's one team that you got to watch out for there, and we're going to be talking about this in the next segment, is Florida State.
Florida State's an interesting team. You know, I've seen them play well, and I've seen them play poorly. You know, I think that they're, you know, a lot better than Syracuse, but obviously not on the level with Carolina.
It's just going to depend on their matchups, because they've got a lot of hype, but a small, fast team might pose some problems. On the other hand, they can just pound it inside all day.
Tom Savage. Tom Savage is the guy, is going to be the guy that plays in Houston when Romo goes down.
That's right. Tom Savage. I remember him from last year. He had a couple good games.
Yeah, some people thought he was the answer too. I'm sorry to hijack the college basketball segment, but I just got, it was one of those things like a poker hand when you throw your cards and you just got to know.
Gotta see. You gotta see. Don't worry, Jeff. There's plenty of college basketball coming up here. So now Jeff can be heard on Sunday morning. Tune him in, 8 to 10 Pacific time. That is 11 to 1 Eastern time at sportsbyline.com. Tell us a bit about your show there, Jeff.
Well, you know, it's a couple of guys in Phoenix, displaced from the Midwest, and, you know, it's kind of talking about Arizona sports, you know, always talking about what's going on in the national scene. You know, my co-host Andy Dorf is a cheesehead, much
guy.
Like you, Packer Dave.
Yep. Yeah, he likes the Bucks. Big Bucks.
You know, so we talk Bucks, we talk Brewers, we talk Browns, Indians, Cavaliers, Suns, Coyotes, Sun Devils, Diamondbacks, Cardinals, and Carlos Dansby coming back to the desert. That's something we'll probably address on Sunday.
Any of those teams any good?
The Packers are okay.
Sorry.
From time
I'm
to time.
I'm sorry, Jeff. He produces the show. We have to have him on. I have no choice. That's not true, Steve. Steve and I have been working together for over 20 years. We've got great rapport on the air, and our dozens of listeners appreciate it each week. Jeff, thanks very much for coming on the show.
I appreciate you having me on, guys.
All right, take care.
All right, take care, guys.
Now, reporting from the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C., hosting the Big Ten Tournament, Steve talks with SRN contributor Craig Crutchfield.
We want to welcome our man in D.C., Craig Crutchfield, checking in with us Thursday night from the Verizon Center, Washington, D.C., where he is assigned to cover the Big Ten Tournament for SRN. So, Craig, tell me about what your experience has been like so far.
All right. Well, Indiana had a pretty good home crowd here. Iowa was starting off coming in 7 out of 10 wins, and IU was cold coming in losing 6 of 8. They both started off sloppy, but IU ended up hitting 5 of 8 threes in the first half. What kept Iowa in the game was 9 turnovers by Indiana and 5 threes by Bohannon. It was a pretty close game in the first half, but IU really stepped it up on the defense and only had 2 turnovers in the first 12 minutes. All right. Davis really stepped up as a frosh. I was impressed with the freshman.
I see. So here's the question then. Is Indiana in the tournament yet?
I don't think so. They look pretty impressive today, but Lenardi is saying that they're going to need another win before they can make it into the tourney.
So then who's up next for the Hoosiers?
The Hoosiers have Wisconsin coming up next, and they've had two close games before, so this ought to be a really good matchup.
So, Craig, I know that you've been to this building before, coming to see probably the Caps and the hockey. So tell me, what's it like going and sitting in the stand versus going in and actually covering a game where you get to see a little bit of the behind-the-scenes stuff?
Well, it's great to see the behind-the-scenes. Tom Crean was talking about how this is a great city and a great arena. He's also recruiting out here, which to the consternation of some of the ACC schools in this area. So they're enjoying it. The fans all seem to love it. There's the stadium is right in the arena is right in the middle of town, so there are a lot of bars and everything nearby. So it's a good crowd. A lot of fans from all the different towns. There are a lot of Michigan or Big Ten teams and fans who live in the D.C. area, so they're coming out in spades.
So that's interesting. Now, I'm sure you heard the comments by Jim Boeheim where he was dissing Greensboro. I mean, it's a similar situation there. You think of the Big Ten, their home has primarily been Indianapolis, and they've also played some games in Chicago. But I can see why these conferences want to reach out. I mean, you're getting exposure in another market. You're getting some television coverage, news coverage that you might not get. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, exactly. Tom Crean said in the post-game conference, that he was pointing out that Big Ten is now a national conference, and this is going to help them with recruiting and exposure. So the fans are still – Wednesday night was pretty empty. There are a lot more fans Thursday night, so I'm sure it'll continue to grow on Friday.
Absolutely. So, okay, so who does Indiana get to play?
They're playing Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin, we know, is pretty tough. I mean, the big teams there are going to be Purdue, Wisconsin, and Maryland. And then, of course, you know, then it's going to be 4, 5, and 6. And hopefully for Northwestern fans, I know that, did you see that Julian Louis-Dreyfus is once again in the house with their husband, Brett Hall? Their son is one of the, he's literally the last guy on the bench for Northwestern. But I guess that's, it's a win-win, I suppose.
Yeah, there's a good Northwestern contingency here. They're pulling for their team, and I think they're going to be excited about they look pretty strong in the first half against Rutgers, and I think they'll probably prevail. So my expectation is that it'll be a really good matchup with Maryland.
Okay, well, thanks so much. Craig Crutchfield, our man checking in from the Verizon Center, Washington, D.C., reporting on the Big Ten. Thanks for coming on to the Weekend Sports Report.
We'll have more on college basketball coming back. Bob Hyman, former columnist for Inside Carolina Magazine and website, is at the ACC tournament at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. We'll check in with him when we return on the Sports Report. Be your own boss. Listen to this from Home Improvement USA. Ideal Furniture can set you up with your own furniture distribution center. You can offer name brand mattress and furniture at a fraction of the cost of traditional retail stores. They combine factory direct pricing with their exclusive no-cost furniture broker marketing system that allows you to substantially undercut retail store prices while generating amazing profits. Getting started with Ideal Furniture is easy with an initial investment under $10,000. They've been around for decades, have over 110 distribution centers across the country, and are rated A+. For the Better Business Bureau and other consumer review sites. Let us walk you through it.
Contact Home Improvement USA at 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com. That's 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com. Be your own boss. Contact Home Improvement USA at 888-437-4223 or kwwradio.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote. Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-718-1731. 800-718-1731. 800-718-1731.
Hey, Packer Dave, Bill Raftery here. Let's talk a little basketball. Get away from that football. This is where the real men are.
Hey, Packer Davis, this is Nicky V, man. I'll tell you one thing. You're not all Rolls Royce. You're not a PT Beard. Hey, tell me you're Brick City, USA. You can't shoot the J, baby. You better stay with the big skin.
Okay, Nicky V, we are in the midst of college basketball. That's for sure. This is that time of the year. I'm Packer Dave, along with Steve Leventhal. It's the Sports Report. And, you know, Steve, I enjoy this time of year when Wisconsin makes it deep into the tournament. That's fun for me. I don't pay too much attention to college basketball otherwise, but I know you pay a whole lot of attention to it. So your thoughts as we talk more on college basketball.
Well, there's a lot of storylines just in the Big Ten itself. You know, you heard about the Michigan basketball team. They had a lot of wind here the other day, and their plane tried to take off in the wind and ended up, they hit the brakes at the last second and slid off the runway. So literally the Michigan team made it to Thursday's game with about 3 hours to spare, and their uniforms were still on the plane because it's an investigation scene. And so they basically played in their practice jerseys. So there's so many storylines. You got Purdue with the Big Ten Player of the Year, Caleb Swanigan. He's averaging 19 points and almost 13 rebounds per game. And then Wisconsin's kind of slid in there. They don't really have any big name stars, but as you know, they've always recruited good players, a lot of veteran on their team, and they're going to be making some noise. They're playing Indiana, which is a lower seed, but they had a big game on Thursday. And then there's Northwestern. They're also the big story because they're for sure now, Dave, a lock to make the tournament. They won their first game. They won 11 games in the Big Ten. So I'd say they're in pretty good shape to make their first NCAA tournament appearance since ever.
Now we bring in former lead columnist for Inside Carolina Magazine and website, and currently covering the ACC tournament at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn for SRN Broadcasting. He is Bob Hyman. Bob, how you doing today?
I'm fine, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
So just out of curiosity.
I'm stuck in the middle of a snowstorm here in Brooklyn.
So I hear. But just out of curiosity, how many years now have you covered the ACC tournament?
This is my 25th or 26th ACC tournament.
Can you recall a field that's this loaded?
Well, you know, the tournament has really changed over the years. I remember when I was a student at Carolina, there were only 7 teams in the ACC at that point. And now they're 15. I mean, it's like a mini NCAA tournament. You know, the quarters yesterday, you know, how many teams were NCAA tournament teams that played yesterday? I mean, almost all of them.
That's right. You know, you've got teams. Yeah, Syracuse is probably going to go, maybe. You know, absolutely. If you look at Louisville, for sure they're going. Miami, more than likely going. Perhaps even Virginia Tech. We know that Virginia is probably going to go, even though they lost to Notre Dame. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, don't you think there's a fairly good chance that we could see 2 or even 3 teams in the Final Four?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I mean, last year we had 2 with Syracuse and Carolina, and the league is as strong, if not stronger, this year than last year.
All right, so let's take a look first at the North Carolina-Miami game. Give me your impressions of that game and how the team did.
I thought Carolina played pretty well. I've got to stop myself from saying we played pretty well. I wasn't out on the court, but I do believe Carolina blew. The two things that jumped out at me, one is the continued good play of Isaiah Hicks. He was really an X factor for the Tar Heels. If he plays well and stays out of foul trouble, he gives them a dimension that other teams around the country I don't think can match, with 2 really quality big men, with him and Kennedy Meeks. And, of course, Tony Bradley, a freshman coming off the bench. So that's number one. The other factor that I thought was very interesting is Justin Jackson, who earlier this week was named ACC Player of the Year, has continued to shoot the ball poorly. He was 2 of 7 from three-point line, three-point area yesterday. And against Duke in Chapel Hill last weekend, he was 0 for 5, started out 0 for 5 from three-point shooting. So, you know, he needs to shoot the ball well if Carolina is going to play up to their potential.
And I know that Roy is, you know, and channeling Dean would have said, you know, just keep shooting the ball until you get your rhythm back. But my question would have been, you know, if I'm Jackson or if I'm coaching him, I go, okay, just step in a little bit, just get a couple. And you saw he hit some of those shots from 15, 16, 17, 18 feet. That was his, he just got to bring that range back out a little bit. And he did have one nice one in the corner. So it's just a question of if he finds that rhythm, then everybody else better watch out.
That's right. And the one great comment that Roy Williams made after the Duke game is that he told Justin, he said, just pause a little bit before you take your three-point shot. You're rushing it a little bit. And he shot better in the second half against Duke and Chapel Hill. And I think he was rushing it again last night. You know, he needs to, you know, not try and live up to the image of ACC Player of the Year and just play his game.
Yeah, there's no question that he needs to do that, settle it down just a little bit. But thankfully, Joel Berry is just playing lights out. And yeah, if Isaiah Hicks can stay out of foul trouble, that team can just cause so much damage out there.
That's right. I mean, as I mentioned, they have two really, really quality big men. And these days, it's tough for, you know, college teams to keep, you know, one big man around. And when you consider that both Kennedy Meeks and Isaiah Hicks are seniors, you know, what Roy Williams says that he likes experienced talent. And in this case, he's got that for both of these players.
All right. So let's tackle one of the other, the big game of the day in the ACC tournament, in my opinion, of course, was Duke and Louisville. And Duke winning that game sets up a rematch with North Carolina. So I'm going to play Coach K talking about how his team stepped up.
We're so pleased with and proud of the win because we beat a heck of a team and a team that could win it all, really. And, yeah, we just made some shots and played our hearts out. They played their hearts out, and we had a couple more shots than them. I don't know how you can split hairs on that game. You know, both teams played so hard. That was a heck of a game, just in case you didn't know that. I would hope that you would know that. And hopefully we have some gas in the tank here, you know, as we push on. But I'm proud of my guys and made big-time shots when we got down by double digits.
Then we're also going to hear Rick Pitino talking about the play of Luke Kennard.
Well, we played 4 games to win the Big East, and I think Connecticut went on to play 5. If they're leg weary, then they're not in very good shape. So I don't buy that. We missed a key block out on the foul line. Key block out. They missed a free throw. We didn't block out. They threw it back out and got a 3. It was a key play in the game. If you don't block out in the foul line, there's something wrong.
Talk about Kennard's performance and how he seemed to take over at the end.
He's a great player. I love him. I recruited him in high school. We gave him his left hand a little bit too much tonight at Louisville. But I love his game. You know, I sometimes look at rankings and, you know, I can tell you from spending 8 years in the pros that what you see on this.net or this.net is not what the general managers are thinking in the pros of who to draft. That's just saying who the best players are in their opinion. I've always felt he was, from an offensive standpoint, 1, 2, or 3 best players in the country because really knows how to play the game of basketball. He really head fakes well, he passes well, and has a great feel for the game, and he's a great foul shooter as well.
So what did you think of Luke Kennard's performance, not just in this game, but this whole season?
I think he, you know, really could have been ACC Player of the Year over Justin Jackson. His offensive game is just tremendous. He is just a fabulous outside shooter. And I thought it was real interesting listening to the press conferences of both Pitino and Krzyzewski, you know, how energized Krzyzewski was by his team's play yesterday. In fact, you know, I think he said it was, you know, really, really fun to coach this team. And Krzyzewski even mentioned that, you know, being 70 years old, when his team plays like this, it really makes him feel young.
So that sets up, of course, the game on Friday night between Duke and North Carolina. The two teams are even in the series so far this season. What do you think of the game that's going to take place, and what are your thoughts?
I think it's going to be a fabulous game. The interesting thing, as you know, Steve, with Carolina and Duke is the home court advantage when each team plays at home is really something. Cameron, of course, is noted as a great home court. And the Dean Smith Center, when Carolina plays Duke, is also a very, very good home court advantage. And tonight, my guess is that the crowd is going to be fairly evenly split between Carolina and Duke fans. There'll be some Notre Dame fans there, too. But for the most part, it's going to be split evenly between Carolina and Duke. And so I don't think there's going to be a real home court advantage for either of the teams. And so it's going to be a question of, well, which team plays better.
Bob Hyman, our man in New York, checking in from the ACC tournament. And not to forget, I mean, that is the North Carolina-Duke game is the marquee matchup. But not to forget, there is another game, Notre Dame and Florida State. And Florida State, 25-7, they're no slouch either this season.
No, in fact, Florida State might be the biggest, in terms of height, college team I've ever covered in all my years of college basketball. And, you know, considering Notre Dame's lack of height, I think it's going to be a real mismatch, rebounding-wise and in other factors where height comes into play. I think that Florida State is absolutely going to really, really destroy Notre Dame tonight.
Excellent. Bob Hyman checking in from his 25th ACC tournament in New York.
All right, Bob. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show, and you enjoy the tournament out there.
Thank you very much. Look forward to it.
Moving on from Toronto, Ontario, he is our professor of sports and talking baseball today and a little bit of hockey later in the segment as we're in the midst of spring training, looking at baseball teams throughout the major leagues and their prospects for 2017. He is John Poulter. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks, Dave. Hello to you, and hello to you as well, Steve.
Hi there.
I've gone to a couple Brewers games already. And when, John, you get here, we're going to go to the Diamondbacks, right?
You bet.
I think the Indians are in town when you're here, because that's what we were talking about before. I think the Indians are in town.
Oh, that'd be an interesting game. Yeah, that we should pencil that one in.
All right, I am penciling in John Indians in Phoenix.
All right, so vendors, okay. Stock up, it's, all you vendors.
Hey, that John, when I visit your house, I might have like two beers, right? I don't drink you out of house and home or anything, do I?
No. And you're always able to leave fully comprehensive. So I don't think there's any danger of it going the wrong way, even at the ballpark.
That's because he stops at the package store before and after.
The package store. They don't even have those in Canada. You know what they have in Canada, Steve? Have you been up there?
And, they're all,
you know,
state stores, aren't they?
Well, in Ontario, anyway, they've got the beer store. Okay, so you go to these beer stores, and you might have one in every, what, 4 or 5 mile radius, John, something like that.
You know, it's probably a pretty good estimate.
These things, you walk in, there's like a few cases that are on display in six packs and stuff like that, but all their beer is way in the back, and they've got boards of what they have back there. The places usually smell like stale beer because all the bottles come back for recycling, and the lines are 5 miles long. I hate it. And then they have these LCBOs, the Liquor Control Board of Ontario. Correct, John?
That's correct.
Okay, LCBO.
Yep.
That's like hanging a cross in front of a vampire to you.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff is run provincially. In some of the Western Canadian provinces, Some of the stores are privatized. I think Alberta is probably the one that has the most privatized stores. But certainly in Ontario, where I've always lived, they're provincially government run. And the reason that they have them all out the back in the beer store, Dave, is because they're all cooled. And when you're standing in the customer area looking at the samples and the empty tins and the boards, you're in room temperature, whereas once they go out the back, it's like a big cooler in a supermarket. And if you've ever been out the back of one of those places, you'd need a jacket because it does get a little cool out there because all the beer is at fridge temperature.
I hate them.
That's the reason it's all out of sight.
I hate them, John. But when they see me coming to the border, you know, they're like, come on in.
Oh, yeah.
Here's thousands of dollars for the Canadian healthcare system.
Right. They go, we're going to make our month when Dave walks in the store. No, seriously,
I'm going to tell you an interesting sidebar to that is that back when I first moved to Canada in 1967, I remember going to the beer store with my father for him to pick up a six pack. And in those days, you actually had to fill out a form to get your beer. They actually controlled or monitored, I guess I should say, rather than control. They actually monitored how much people were buying. And you had to put your name, your address, your date of birth, you know, basically your whole life history to buy a six pack of beer. The laws have slackened an awful lot in those 50 years. But at one time, they used to monitor it quite carefully.
I hate those stores. It's just like, you know, you should have every half mile a place where you can buy beer. You shouldn't have to drive 5 miles to go get a six pack and then wait in line forever in a smelly facility all full of other beer drinkers.
They just want to make you earn it, Dave. That's the theory. Yeah, they just don't want to make it feel like it's a freebie. You got to earn it. You know, it's like you have that dessert. You go out and you have a walk before you have the dessert, then you don't feel badly about the calories.
And they charge you a lot for that experience, too. At least the LCBO store, they're a little bit better. You know, it's not kind of a dump like I think the beer stores are.
I will tell you that my one and only trip to the beer store in Canada was, I think it was 2002 when Detroit was playing Carolina. I got assigned to go cover that game, but I decided to stay in Windsor because there's a nice little hotel and casino there. And so I stopped at the package goods store. This was long before craft beer. Now you can get all kinds of great beer here, but I do remember stocking up on a couple cases of Molson and some other good stuff and brought them back to the States.
Is there anything that's interesting about this story at all, or that you just went?
That was it. I don't remember filling out any forms.
Everybody, that last whole minute, now you know Steve went to the beer store in Canada 15 years ago. Thank you, Steve, for that.
Just to say that he'd been there. It's one of those life experiences Golf that flat. Every American has to have.
Okay. How many listeners do you think we have left right now? Two? Three?
Well, your wife, my wife, John's
wife. No, she doesn't listen. None of them listen. All right, John. The Brewers, I've been to a couple of their games. They look pretty good. They've got a good-looking second baseman. I forget his name. And pitching has not been bad. So let's talk about Milwaukee to start this segment because you're the baseball expert.
Well, it's interesting that you make the comment about the Brewers, Dave, because they're clearly a team that is in a rebuilding mode. 73-89 in 2016, which was good enough for fourth in the National League Central. And the last 5 years have seen the Brewers fourth three times, third once, and second once. So they're in that division. So they're clearly in a rebuilding mode. Since taking over as GM at the start of last season, David Stearns has steadily worked at obtaining young quality prospects from other teams and at the same time shedding veterans that still had some value but were unlikely to be in their prime when the Brewers were ready to compete again. And that started last year, and one of the guys he picked up was the individual you're speaking of, and that's Jonathan Villar. He came from the Astros, yes, which was the team that Stearns worked for before he came over to the Brewers. And in addition to Villar, he's picked up outfielder Keon Broxton from the Padres, outfielder Lewis Brinson, and right-handed pitcher Lewis Ortiz from the Texas Rangers. And to get all of these prospects, basically all he's given up is star catcher Jonathan Lucroy and a marginal relief pitcher, a minor league relief pitcher by the name of Cy Snead. So he's actually done a pretty good job in retooling this without tearing down the major league roster too badly. And then over this winter, he also picked up third baseman Travis Shaw from the Boston Red Sox in a trade. So this is a work in process. There's no question that this is going to be a long haul for the Brewers. I'd say they're probably in year three of what's probably a five-year plan. They're clearly in a division where there's a lot of good competition. Pittsburgh, the Cardinals, the Cubs, the three teams that come to mind. Cincinnati, the other team in that division, is probably much along the same lines as Milwaukee and in a pretty big rebuild. But in terms of the players that he's picked up, Brixton and Ortiz are probably at least a year away. I don't suspect that they will be big stars this year, but Broxton is penciled in to start in center field, Villar at second base, and Shaw should be the everyday third baseman. So there's some new blood being introduced. Lucroy definitely will be missed, but so far in spring training from the couple of Brewers games that I've seen on TV, a guy by the name of Jett Bandy, who was picked up from the Angels, appears to be a very capable starting catcher, and I've been very impressed with the way he's managed the running game in the two or three times I've seen him play this spring. So that may not be as big a loss defensively as you would expect. Clearly, there'll be a fall-off offensively from Lucroy, but I would think that Bandy is probably a good pick for the future. Chris Carter's bat's definitely going to be missed, and the Brewers are obviously hoping that Eric Thames, who's returning to the major leagues after three seasons in Korea, will pick up a chunk of that production playing at first base. And he had 124 home runs the 3 years he played in Korea. And I've never seen a Korean baseball game, but my understanding is that quality-wise, it's probably fairly close to AAA. So reasonable numbers. Obviously, will fall off a little bit in the major leagues, but definitely a step in the right direction. From a pitching standpoint, the rotation's mostly young, relatively unproven. Junior Guerrera, Zach Davis, Jimmy Nelson, Willie Peralta, Matt Garza, they seem to be the penciled-in starting five until some of the young prospects become big league ready. But realistically, none of that starting five are Max Scherzer or Clayton Kershaw. So there may be some long afternoons for the Brewers pitchers. If you look at the bullpen, that's also a work in process. Naftali Feliz was added over the winter. He's penciled in as the closer. He only had two saves last year with Pittsburgh, but he does have 99 career saves, mostly with Texas in 2010 and 2011. So he has done the job before. If he gets the opportunity, he should be fine. On the positive side, the Brewers led the major leagues last year with 181 stolen bases, but it's still going to be a long season in Milwaukee. Craig Counsell certainly has management's full support, and Stearns is making great strides in the efforts to rebuild, as we've discussed. I think they're on the right track, and you know, don't be surprised if Ryan Braun is dealt to a contender during the season if the Brewers get off to a slow start or fall out of the race. Clearly, he'll want to have some say in where he goes, and he will probably only likely go to a contender, but he'd be a good quality player to attract some additional quality prospects back in return. So all in all, the short term doesn't look overly good, but the long term looks pretty reasonable for the Brewers.
All right, John Poulter with us from Toronto. And we got to move through these next two pretty quick as we're getting towards the end of the hour, John. So let's talk Cleveland for a couple minutes.
Cleveland, 94-67, AL champions in 2016, lost Game 7 of the World Series to the Cubs after they were up 3-1. They've been very good the last five seasons, first, second, third, and fourth in their division. They go into 2017 perhaps hoping that their fate is the same as the Kansas City Royals, who lost Game 7 of the 2014 World Series and then won the whole thing the following year. On a positive side with the Indians, they had a lot of their success last year without Danny Salazar and Carlos Carrasco, two quality starting pitchers who were hurt. And in addition to those two guys returning healthy, they'll have Andrew Miller for a full season in the bullpen. And they're also hoping that Michael Brantley will be returning and be healthy enough to play regularly in left field. And then they, of course, added designated hitter Edwin Encarnacion from the Blue Jays as a free agent, who all he did last year was tied with David Ortiz for the RBI lead in the American League with 127. So starting pitching is a strength with Cleveland. They've got Kluber, Bauer, and Tomlin joining Carrasco and Salazar. Their bullpen is also extremely strong with Cody Allen, Brian Shaw, Dan Otero, and a new addition, Boone Logan, joining Miller. So pitching-wise, Indians pretty strong. Up the middle, Francisco Lindor and Jason Kipnis provide a very strong middle infield. And at the corners, you've got Santana and Ramirez. So there's no chopped meat in that lineup whatsoever. Yan Gomes is an above-average catcher. He needs to stay healthy, but if something happens to him, Roberto Perez proved last year that he can handle the job on a short term. It's a pretty good team. It's been well put together by management, and Terry Francona is one of the best and most respected managers in the game. I think Francona's had 12 straight winning seasons as a manager, and that's a pretty good accomplishment. They're a small market team. They've shown in the past that they can draft and develop good players and then supplement that base with the likes of Miller and Encarnacion. So that's pretty much a good way to build a team. I'm going to suggest that they should win their division fairly easily, and I think they have an excellent shot at repeating as the AL representative in the World Series. I think things are looking pretty good in Cleveland right now.
All right, and Washington.
Washington is probably one of the biggest enigmas in the major leagues. 95-67, they won the National League East last year, lost the National League Division Series to the Dodgers. In the last 5 years, this team has been first three times, twice second, and has averaged 91.6 wins in those 5 years, but they've never reached the National League Championship Series. So there's got to be some issues there. Injuries have been a big part of it. They've got a lot of big names: Bryce Harper, Jason Worth, Ryan Zimmerman, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, several others. They've all been hurt, and I don't know what the problem is there, but they seem to have the injury bug. Scherzer has won the Cy Young, but he had bad injuries. Strasburg has had bad injuries. I think he's been on the DL 8 times in a very short career. So you have to kind of wonder what the problem is there. They need to get some talent that's healthy, and they've got lots of talent, but they just for some reason or other can't keep it healthy. Pitching is a strength. Their weakness was probably their catcher. They were expected over the winter to go into spring training with Derek Norris, who was with the Padres last year as their starting catcher, but at the start of spring training they picked up free agent Matt Wieters, who played for the Orioles the last few years. So that's going to make their catching core a lot more solid. So I'd say that their biggest challenge might be filling the closer spot. They either couldn't or wouldn't be signed Mark Melancon last year, so they went into spring training with Sean Kelly, who only had 7 saves last year as their closer. Big thing for the Nationals, the lucky thing for the Nationals, they're in a pretty weak division. Other than the Mets, there isn't an awful lot of competition there, so they should be fine.
So, John, they seem to suffer the same disease as the Washington Caps do, the thrill of victory in the regular season, the agony of defeat early in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same story. I guess on a baseball parallel, they're probably much like the Atlanta Braves in the 90s, where the Braves won all those, I think it was 13 straight division titles or 13 straight postseason appearances. And for all of that, they had one World Series appearance one World Series win, 2 or 3 losses. But yeah, maybe it's something about playing in Washington. Maybe it's something in the water in the city or something along those lines. But it is rather unique, that's for sure.
John Poulter with us from Toronto. Now let's move to hockey. Steve's in Chicago. His Blackhawks 42-19. And you've got some audio from Chicago.
Yeah, the Hawks had 4 games off. They hosted Anaheim and promptly lost. So after the game, though, Duncan Keith talks about what he thought was going on.
You know, we did a lot of good things, but still obviously wasn't good enough, trying to find a way to get one. Maybe we, if we could keep it simpler in some instances and just get pucks out the net with traffic, maybe we would have had a bounce.
I don't know, are you scoreboard watching yet this time of year when you see the Wild lose and you miss an opportunity to pass them up? Does that gnaw at you at all?
No, I mean, we know they got a good team, and we just obviously want to focus on ourselves here, and it's obviously not what we wanted, not even getting a point here, so we got a job to do tomorrow and try to bounce back. We had chances, whether that's just executing and getting the finish, I don't know. I mean, it could be I thought we did a lot of things that were pretty sharp out there with our passing and puck movement, but obviously getting guys in front there and maybe getting a greasier goal, whether it's a rebound or a tip or something like that.
John, your thoughts on the Blackhawks?
Well, I think Duncan Keith kind of summed it up and said all the things that we would expect an athlete to say at this time of year in that kind of situation. Probably the biggest issue was they ran into a hot goaltender. You outshoot a team 43-26, and you should do better than losing 1-0. So I don't really know what the issue was with the Blackhawks. They've certainly been scoring a lot of goals lately, so maybe it was just one of those nights. It was the way that it rolled around for them. But you know, when you look at the fact that for all of those weeks, the Minnesota Wild had all of those games in hand, they're now pretty much back to being close in games. Minnesota played 65 and the Blackhawks 66 as we speak, and there's a one-point difference, the Blackhawks trailing by a point. So they missed a huge opportunity on Thursday night with Tampa Bay beating Minnesota 4-1. The two teams are tied in regulation and overtime wins at 39, which is the first tiebreaker in terms of if the two teams are tied in points. And that first spot is pretty important, because first spot in the conference gets you a first round series against the lowest wildcard team. So it's 1-8. So it's worth doing. If you finish second, you end up playing the third place team in your division, which right now is Nashville, St. Louis giving them a little bit of a push. But if I'm the Blackhawks, I'd rather play the eighth place team than either St. Louis or Nashville. It's going to be tough getting through that Western Conference, and it's a bit of a grind as it is most years. So I think it's important that the Blackhawks continue to push the Wild, and hopefully they'll get back into first place. The Scott Darling injury isn't going to help them. Hopefully Crawford stays healthy. But, you know, there's so much firepower in Chicago. You have to think that these guys will pick each other up as they go along. And certainly the way that Kane has been playing lately and Jonathan Toews has been producing offensively, you have to think that they're still on the right track.
All right. And John, Duncan Keith, born in Winnipeg, grew up in suburban Vancouver, and you knew his dad, huh?
Yeah, I didn't know him personally. I spoke to him many times on the phone. We both worked for the same organization. I was with one organization for 42 years. I'm not sure how long Mr. Keith was with the organization. He'd be a little bit older than I am, but he was working in Northern Ontario when I first had the opportunity to speak with him. And then they moved to the Vancouver area, the BC area, and that's where Duncan Keith learned most of his hockey and played most of his minor hockey. And he will probably tell you that his hometown is in BC, although his birth certificate says Winnipeg. Ironically, the same city that Jonathan Toews was born in. So two of the biggest stars on the Blackhawks hail from the same city in Western Canada.
The Canadian connection right here on the Sports Report. Well, John, thanks so much for coming on. We will do it again next week. And we want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Weekend Sports Report. Remember, new shows posted each week at about 3 o'clock Central Time on Fridays at InternetFM.com and KWWRadio.com. You can also hear us each week at MileHighRadio.com, and that is at 2 p.m. Central Time each week. So, for John Poulter from Toronto, Steve Leventhal in Chicago.
Go Heels.
For Bob Hyman, who is reporting from the ACC tourney in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, Craig Crutchfield from the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C., Jeff Rich from Phoenix, I'm Packer Dave saying thanks a lot for listening. Have a great day. Take care. Come back next week. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get the bears, scumbag!
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. Now you ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now, you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's
mouth over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.